All right, now, going on with our subject, Steps to a Goal. I hope that this doesn't seem to be dragged out too long, but I just know very well from my many years of teaching that you have to do quite a bit of repetition. And I know a lot of folks who try to understand the mystery understand that too, because they find it a little bit hard too to understand as well as I did many years ago. And we need to repeat these things, and not only that, but remember the old song, Tell Me the Old Story? I don't know, something about these great truths of the Bible can bear repeating. Now, if I was studying Huckleberry Finn, I wouldn't want that repeated that often, would you? See, it's something different. The ordinary books we have in the world and so on. Oh, once in a while, I want to come along, maybe read it twice. But that's about it. We have, for certain literary reasons, made studies of some of the great writers like Shakespeare and so on, but even that can become tiresome. And so there's a lot of people who have not made much study of the Word, and of course they don't see it is a connected purpose. And a pattern has a pattern. Now, from the merely human point of view, the plans and purposes of God seem to have many turnings and setbacks. Notice that. Setbacks from the human standpoint. From God's standpoint, there are no setbacks. We're looking at the wrong side of the cloth. Ever see some nice handiwork? And cloth, some of these folks who sew real well. Now, once in a while, you can look at one from the wrong side and get a pretty good pattern. And you know that that person has been pretty good at the art of sewing. Now, right here at my right, on top of this old-time radio here, right at my right hand, is a doily made by Mrs. Charles Welch. And it's almost as good from one side as the other. I'm mentioning that because she was a very good worker, very conscientious, and did everything just right. And so it doesn't make too much difference which side you put up. Well, God works that way. But man's works ordinarily aren't that way. Even if there was the old poem about the builders, and they were to build everything just perfect because God could see the things that unseen to man. And so the things that are not seen, they should do that just as perfect as the things that they could see. Maybe you remember that old poem. I don't remember who wrote it now because it's been years since I've seen it. And, of course, it appears into man, the man of the street, as we call him, the average man, that man on the earth is more or less of an accident. That's about the only explanation he can make. And some of them go so far as to say it was an accidental evolutionary act in which a monkey was made into a man. All sorts of explanations, you see. And you go back in the mythologies and see how they try to explain it too. I wouldn't have time here to go into some of those, but it may be familiar to the folks who are listening. And of course, in addition to him being an accident here, why, they realize the fact that he's in a big mess. And so then the business of God and his only business is to get man out of his mess. And that's as far as they can see. Now that, making God a pretty small God, isn't it? And making man maybe a little bit more important than what he is. But when you look at it from God's standpoint, every link of his purpose is clear and distinct. And all things are going according to his purpose and schedule. And of course, when we read the prophecies and see years given and so on, in many instances, we can see that. And it's amazing how much God knew ahead of time. Why, there are men in the Old Testament, that God named and told what they were going to do before they were born. And so our business today is to read the scriptures and try to see the plan and purpose of the ages from God's viewpoint. And that'll lead us out of a lot of fog. No fog up on the hilltop, mountaintop, you know. Down in the valley is where you find the fog. And I think if a man can do that with certain limitations, he can accomplish that much. He can see something of God's plan and purpose. And he's condescended to give us a revelation concerning his mind and purpose in these matters. But the trouble is that we somehow or other don't read his revelation. And of course, men get disappointed when they find that there are greater issues in the plan of the ages than man and his troubles, the mess that he's in. Because that's his sole idea, is to get rid of these things, escape from them. And that's about it. That's about all he has in his mind. And so the average person is pretty well puzzled when he finally discovers that there was sin and death in the creation long before man came on the scene. I wonder how many of you, if you would take a poll of the average congregation in a church, how many of them would know that, if you'd take a poll? Well, I never heard of such a thing when I was a youngster. And we attended a fundamentalist church. So a man's just a little bit shamed when he finds that there are beings who had troubles long before man came under the curse. Man isn't the first one to have trouble. And whenever we seek to study some great truth or principle of scriptures, we find, as a usual thing, that it has its roots in Genesis. Strange, isn't it? But there it is. And it has to be followed right through the Bible to the Revelation as far as any earth purpose is concerned. And many threads go right through the Bible, follow them through. It's a joy to trace them and see the outworking of the purposes of God. Now, in Appendix 3 of the Companion Bible, you will find a table of 30 themes of Genesis that are carried on later into the Revelation. Now, we're not going into those 30 at all, but for a little matter of study here, let's consider 7 of these to see the continuity of the purpose. Now, in Genesis 1:1, we see the earth created. In Revelation 21:1, it passes away. That's the history of the earth, the cell thing. In Genesis 3, we see the first corruption of the human race by Satan. In Revelation 20, 3 and 10, is Satan's final attempt at corrupting the human race. And of course, it ends in a great disaster for him. In Genesis 3 is the entrance of sin into the human race. In Revelation 21 and 22 is the end of sin. In Genesis 3, the tree of life is forfeited. They give it up because of their sin. In Revelation 22, it is restored. In Genesis 3:19, death entered. That is, death entered this creation. And in Revelation 21, there's no more death. In Genesis 3, sorrow and suffering enter. In Revelation 21:4, there's no more sorrow. And in Genesis 3:15, the doom of the old serpent is pronounced. In Revelation 20:10, that doom is executed, is carried out. You only need to take 7 of those items and look at what we find. And you can go on to the rest of them. You have companion Bibles. Take that Appendix 3 and look through that. Now, The interesting part then now is to trace right through the Bible, declaring out in all their phases these topics that we've been talking about. Now Job asks the question, why? And how many people do? I have had people come to me and they say, well, why? And usually it has something to do with their own personal troubles. Once in a while they're looking farther than that. Well, Job asked why, and Job really never knew. But he was satisfied with what he did know. But we, who have an introduction to the book of Job, and also an ending, epilogue, we know. But we don't know that Job knew about those things. Those first two chapters, and most of the last chapter. Now, we didn't have this divinely inspired introduction and conclusion of the book. We never would know why Job had to go through all he did. That'd still be a puzzle to us. Just like a lot of things that we go through in our own lives, and we never know here, on this side of the grave, why. Someday we'll know, if it's important enough for us to know. Now, you see, back of all of this trouble that Job had was an accuser. Now, there is a keystone. That's what caused all the problems and questions and so on, and all of this talk of those miserable advisors, the three of them, and then another one coming in, a young man, and talking, all of this conversation they have, and so on. And yet the thing was all so simple, they were just simply an accuser, and that had caused all the ruckus. He was an adversary. An adversary means one who's against, and he certainly was against Job, and against God, too. And so he was working behind the scenes, this adversary, and Job didn't know that. And of course, a lot of things those are working today, and we don't know it either. Now in Romans, we have a problem similar to what we find in Job. Job had asked the question, how can a man be just before God? And in Romans, it's revealed to us how God can be just and the justifier of the ungodly. We'd never dream of that if we didn't have it revealed to us. And so in his wonderful word, God has given us a peek behind the scenes, that is, so to speak. And you know what that means, I think, that once in a while a visitor is allowed to get behind the scenes, behind the stage, and see what's going on. You see, all is for the public to see in a theatrical production is what's put out there on the stage. They're not let in on all the preparations and all the things that go on in the dressing rooms and so on. They don't know about that. They don't have that. So all they see is the finished product that is made for them to see. And God has set forth a theater, in a way, the plan, purpose of the ages. And he does let us behind the scenes a little once in a while, but I think people usually think this is the point. And so we have been given that peek behind the scenes. And we know what is the prime cause of sin and death. And all the sorrow that comes from them. We know that now. And how that the promise of life before age times will finally come in and be realized. And then will come the goal. The goal of the ages. And that's what, of course, we're talking about, is steps to a goal. And as far as the earth purpose is concerned, that goal is summed up in 1 Corinthians 15, that God can be all and in all. And of course, all creation looks forward to that glorious end at least. When I talk creation, I mean the new creation that's of the Bible. All men who are new creatures, and so on. That is then the end of the earthly program, that God can be all in all. I can't remember the verse, but in Ephesians 5, I think it is, we're told that as far as the church is concerned, which is a subject for this age, that Christ in the church is all and in all. I've forgotten the verse. But you can see that has to do with a heavenly purpose, not particularly the earth purpose. But someday, when all sin is gone and Satan is off the scene, is no more, and we have a new creation, a new heavens, and a new earth, then God can be all and in all. Because there won't be anything left that will offend. Now, this lack of understanding of this purpose of the ages as given in the Bible, the overall plan, has cheated a lot of people of the enjoyment of the blessings they might have had. And they don't understand simply because they don't read, for one thing. But I can tell you this, that no amount of reading it's just itself is going to reveal it. There are things in the Bible we can never, never understand except as the Holy Spirit reveals them to us. And that's one reason why that the Bible is not a very well-known book. There are false ideas concerning the purpose of the creation of Genesis 1, 2 to 31, and that has blinded a lot of folks. I didn't say 1:1, I said 1, 2 to 31. Now this recreation, I call it that, because the earth was created many, many ages before Genesis 1, 2. And I might stop again, I think I've said this before, and you can think on it. In Genesis 1:1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And it's very evident from what we read in 38th chapter of Job that the earth was created quite some time, or the heavens were created quite some time before the earth was. And the foundations of the earth were laid at a later point, and the angels sang for joy. Now, this recreation, which took 6 days, was provisional. It's not the perfection that we look for. But it was a perfection in one way. It provided man with everything he needed. The man as he was created and put in the garden. Now, actually, when we look at Genesis and Revelation, especially as we were just a little while ago, we find that this recreation, these 6 days, are looking forward to something far better. I said it was only provisional. It was only temporary. Because it is a provision put in until the time there be a new heavens and an earth in which should dwell righteousness. Of course, somebody's going to ask right away, well, why do we have to have a new heavens and a new earth? Doesn't this one do all right? Sure, with our limitations and so on, we get along pretty well, unless we happen to be that majority. I was going to say minority, a majority who are living in poverty, because in the earth today, all the populations of the earth, there are millions who have never known what it was to have a full tummy, never had enough to eat, and many are starving every day. So evidently, this earth isn't a goal to which we're looking at. It's imperfect. It isn't a perfection we'd expect of God. But it was made for man to start out on his probation. Satan had his probation and he fell. Now man is put on the scene. We'll see what he does. You see, before man was put here, sin had already entered the creation. But in the midst of that sin and death that's going on before Adam was even put here on the earth, God had a plan to work out. Some creatures are going to be on probation someday so that those who stood the test could be used later in the sphere of blessing in the heavenly places, and some of them used in the planned purpose for the earth itself and the heavens above it. So we can see that the groundwork is being laid, the dressing room has been fixed up, and so things are going forward. Now the central subjects of new creation, as far as this earth is concerned, are the tree of life and the water of life. So that has to do with the earth purpose. As for the heavens or heavenly places, we don't know anything about what's there. It's outside of creation, outside of matter, and so on as we know it. And nothing is said. There'd be no language to describe things that are not of our earthly existence and understanding. And so if there was something to be revealed, we wouldn't understand it anyway. I am making these little notes and observations because there's a lot of confusion today. And there are people who think that the highest thing that they can do is to follow the Sermon on the Mount, as if that was marching orders for the present time. It isn't. All you have to do is just to try following those rules for about a day. You don't need even a day. And you'll understand what I'm saying. It won't work. Way back when I was a youngster, there was a novel written, I don't remember who wrote it, The Calling of Dan Matthews. It was about a young preacher who got the idea that the Sermon on the Mount was to be done today, and he started to practice it. Well, to make a long story short, it ended up with him pulling the deacon out of his buggy and giving him a beating. Does that sound like the Magna Carta of the kingdom? Well, he found it wouldn't work. And it isn't. It isn't the Magna Carta of the Millennial Kingdom. It is the Magna Carta of the Kingdom of Heaven was being preached at that very time by John Baptist, by the Lord himself, and by the 12 apostles during Acts. And you can see right there in Jerusalem at the starting of Acts that some of them started to follow the principles of the Magna Carta, the Sermon on the Mount. That when dissension went in and there was a division and so on, that faded out. And just try that today. The first fellow comes along and asks for your coat, and give it to him. He wants some money, why lend it to him or give it to him, whatever. It's only take you about a day and he'd be broke. It just won't work. But in the kind of an atmosphere that will be in the future, it'll work. It was supposed to work when John the Baptist was preaching the kingdom, and it was supposed to work when the Lord was preaching, but you see, there were not very many who were ready to try it, to believe in it. And remember, this Magna Carta had to do with Israel, not the Gentiles. It was given out to the disciples before any Gentiles came into the blessings of Israel. And so the Magna Carta, Sermon on the Mount, has nothing to do with people who have their hope of future blessings in the heavenly places. The laws and the customs in these two places, the earth and the heavenly places, are so different. We couldn't think of applying the same thing to each other. And so we're not to forget that God's plans and purposes are for both the heavenly places and the earth. But you don't find them in the same place, particularly. Now in Genesis 1:1, we have the creation of the heavens and the earth. Remember, heaven's there is first. In Revelation, we find there is to be a time when there will be new heavens and a new earth. Same order. And God has several families and different kinds of creatures. And some of these will be on the earth in the future. and some people will be in the heavenly places. But as far as any creatures outside of man is concerned, there's nothing said. Now the question comes up, do you know your calling? Are you destined for the earth or are you destined for the heavenly places? Now there's another question comes up, and how and when are these changes in the heavens and the earth going to be made? Well, we find that the heavenly program will come first. And of course, that's the sphere we know the least about. The old principle of the first to be last and the last to be first holds good in these two just as well. The Gentiles who figure in the dispensation of the mystery have the realization of their hope before Israel does theirs. And there's good reason for that. By one creature, Satan, sin entered the universe. By one man, sin entered the world that we know now. Satan would like to have gotten into the heavenly places. And where he and his angels failed to get into that place, the church and mystery will find out its place. And at that time, Satan will be cast into the earth from the heavens which are above. And shortly, Satan and all that follow him will be dispossessed of everything on the earth. Remember, Satan comes to the earth and gives all of his power and authority to his son, the Antichrist. He'll be dispossessed someday, and Israel will be the nucleus of the nations and take over the earth. Well, now, when you come to think about it, that's rather an important thing. As far as the earth is concerned, it seems from the temptation of the Lord Jesus Christ that Satan had control of the kingdoms of this earth, and he could offer them to the Lord as a shortcut, right then and there, if the Lord would fall down and worship him. Well, that would be a temptation in a way, a shortcut, to avoid the death, all the persecution and things that he had, to get that kingdom right then and there without all of that. And he didn't argue with Satan that he couldn't give it to him. When we go back in Daniel, we do find that there are princes ruling over nations on the earth, especially the prince of Persia and the prince of Grecia. So Satan wasn't just fooling around when he made that offer to Christ. Was it any temptation to the Lord, do you think, in a way? I should say not. You know what he's going to do. You knew what's going to happen to Satan, too. But you see, all of these things are accomplished in a series of steps that are plainly outlined in the Word, and which we begin to understand when we see what the goal is. Of course, what we need to do is to take time to search and see. And that takes more time and work than a lot of people like to do. I certainly am glad, though, that in the last few weeks we have heard from some new people in some new places, and they really are getting together and studying, getting books and studying their Bible and so on, trying to find all of these things we're talking about. And more, these little groups here and there are starting up and getting going. And it's always good news to us. And for us today, if we would walk in the good works, which are before ordained, we should walk in them. And be careful to learn about God's ways. And find what these good works are and proceed to do them. As a great reward for those who daily search the scriptures and find these things. I say reward. Now, we can also call that a crown. We can call it a prize. Those words are sort of interchangeable, synonymous, or whatever you want to call it. And we notice that Paul uses all three of those in his prison epistles. Well, it's surprising how few believers today, and we have a lot of people today who really are believers, they know the Lord, there's no question about that, and yet they don't have any place in their thinking and teaching for God's purpose for the earth. Now, does it sound like I'm contradicting myself? Well, just wait a minute. I'll tell you why. Nearly all of them think that being saved means that one is surely going to heaven. Isn't that right? In fact, that's a synonym for being saved. Well, you're going to heaven? Well, yes. Some of these charismatic folks were walking the streets of Petersburg, Michigan many years ago, and they would approach people on the street and ask them, are you going to heaven or are you going to hell? They didn't say anything about salvation. And so, as I say, the majority of people today think about people going to heaven. Now, what heaven is and where and so on, they don't know, of course. And so, that some should spend the future ages on the earth is entirely beyond their comprehension. Now, some of the fundamental peoples talk about the millennial kingdom, the kingdom of Christ here on the earth. But, generally speaking, that isn't even known about. In fact, I can remember way back when I was introduced to studies in the millennial kingdom, and that's been a long time ago. And it sure was news to me, and I'd been reading my Bible, I'd read it through a few times, and so on, and I'd gone to a church, but I hadn't just particularly heard that. And so, about that time, came out a book, called Jesus is Coming by Blackstone. And I got hold of that all before 1920. And the Lord's Return by Silver along the same line. Now, right back in those days, those were absolute heresy. The people hadn't taken up that like they have in the many years between. But these people had failed to see two lines of purpose, that there was one for the earth and the other for the heavens, or heavenly places, which they didn't know much about. And so, these are problems we have to meet with, because the average Christian that you meet on the street and anywhere is probably thinking that he's saved and he's going to heaven. And if he doesn't know about the mystery or the secret, he isn't. He'll be among the saved peoples of the earth. And so, we have some cults springing up who have gone to the other extreme, and all they can see is that there's going to be an earth program. And they're looking forward to God's government on the earth and shutting their eyes to the purpose for the heavens. So you have all kinds of extremes as you go around among the various denominations and churches and so on. And I might just say personally, I'm glad that I had some experience, and I have been in a sort of a visitor in many, many churches, denominations and so on, and know something of what is going on. And that made it easier for me to comprehend some of these things. And then there's some who may not even follow either one of those. They can't see the earth program. And yet they will advocate following the teachings of Jesus. And they're the folks who cater especially to what we call the red letter editions of the Bible. And those words in the red letters, the only ones that they seem to care about or want to know. Well, the difficulty is that the folks who made up these red-letter Bibles didn't know their Bibles too well, and they didn't get it all correct. And they stuck some places in red letters which didn't belong there at all. I'll not make any mention of those now because I won't take time to go off to one side. You can ask me about that afterwards. But what if one should follow his teachings as he gave them here while on earth? Well, there wouldn't be any place for a heavenly purpose. I might just add that here for our present purpose of studying at least. When he was here on the earth, he was dealing with the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And they had the millennial kingdom as their hope. And they didn't know anything about any other purpose. So you see, there's no hope for going into heavens of any kind for the people back when the Lord was on the earth and the apostles are preaching doing Acts. And Christ will rule on the earth for 1,000 years with a rod of iron in the midst of his enemies. Don't forget that. I don't know, people seem to think that the millennium is heaven or something. It isn't. Read Psalm 2. He'll rule with a rod of iron in the midst of his enemies. But Jerusalem is the capital city. And Satan bound. And that reign will end with a great rebellion by the nations of the earth. Now that's a part of the future earth program, and we have that very well outlined in our Bible. There's no need to mistake that. I think we'd better just take a few minutes here and take a little summary of what we have been doing so far. This is about 11 of these short studies that we've been doing. And the first is, we got to go back and repeat a little bit, the great master key that opens all that is in the scriptures is Christ. Now we can't get away from that. Paul says something about the mystery of Christ in Ephesians 3, and that the dispensation of the mystery completes it. But if we just read what the scriptures have to say about Christ from beginning to end, that'll give us a key. We can see what his place and purpose is. And so we need to study the unfolding of the great mystery or secret of Christ from Genesis 3:15 onward. I'm using Genesis 3:15 there because that is where there's a revelation of the seed of woman, the first mention of Christ as such. Actually, it starts at Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and that creator was Christ. John's Gospel, the first chapter, shows that very plainly. But that is not telling us anything particularly about the character of Christ himself, his work, and so on. That begins with Genesis 3:15. And you can see then he is the goal towards all the purpose of the age's ends. And the scriptures cannot be understood apart from Christ. They are they which testify of him. And he made that claim himself. Secondly, the great bulk of the Bible is concerning the king and his kingdom. Now, all the Bible may be divided into 7 parts, as we have done in these studies tonight. 6 of these, as we have shown, deal with Israel and their kingdom. So the great bulk of it is concerning Israel and the kingdom. 3. It's during the period, which we call the present time, that Israel set aside for a season. Now there was one time when they were set aside for a season, it was of 70 years. Hosea 6:2 seems to indicate that this particular period in which Israel was set aside is spoken of as 2 days. And you can take that for what's worth. And then we find that the 7th section unfolds this great theme, and this section was the last 7 epistles of Paul. First, we have a 4th. We have seen that the purpose of God is moving forward along 2 great avenues, or streams, or roads, or whatever you want to call them, the heavens and the earth. For instance, in the book of Revelation, if you outline it, you will find 7 pairs of events occurring, and in each instance it's the heaven and the earth, the heaven and the earth. That ought to give us a pretty good hint just there when we outline the book of Revelation. Now that is the outline starting with chapter 4 and going on. You can look at that sometime for yourself. Of course, redemption has to do with both of these. There was a Lamb foreordained and slain in the purpose of God long before man ever appeared on the scene. The Lamb slain before the foundation of the world. And of course, that goes back to your promise that you have in Ephesians 3:6, 2 Timothy 1:1, and Titus 1:2. And we have spoken of that many times, and we probably will more times in the future. And fifthly, there was a great secret or mystery which had been withheld from Revelation all through the ages till the end of Acts. Withheld from Revelation, never been mentioned. And that secret was that the heavenly places sometime would be populated with a portion of the redeemed people of the earth. Well now folks, there's a lot of people who can't believe that simply because it's just too wonderful to believe. Put it that way. People make that expression sometimes, well that's just too wonderful, I can't believe it. Well that's about it. They're so bound to the earth, they're so earthly minded, that they can't conceive of anything beyond this earth. Well, of course, Satan would have it so. As long as you'll eat the forbidden fruit, all of that sort of thing, like, heavenly places won't mean anything. And so this is a great basic fact for today, and it's the foundation of the great mystery of which Paul was made a minister. And if we were to go back over what we have said so far and get this broad foundation on which the future argument is based, we would have to be good Bereans and search the scriptures and read it closely, checking to see if these things be so. And that's what I want folks to do, not to take my word for it. I suppose if I weren't around here to answer your questions and so on, you haven't studied for yourself. And I'm not going to be here forever because I haven't ever eaten the tree of life. And so I would say to really have success in this is to use an old saying which says, make haste slowly. Make haste slowly. If you think that over. Because there are great issues at stake in these studies that we are studying here. And if we didn't know the plan and purpose of God for the ages, we wouldn't have much hope. Well, we will end here for tonight, have our prayer. Dear Father, we are thankful for thy word, that thou hast revealed these great things to us. Thou hast shown us many things in the scriptures concerning us and also concerning thy son. Thankful for the revelation we have of him, the great creator, the great savior of the world, the Lamb, all of these things revealed of him, and finally as far as Israel and the earth's purpose is concerned, he is the Lion that comes and destroys the enemies. And I'm thankful too for this great mystery revealed to us concerning the heavenly places and our place in this great calling. We do ask that thou will guide and direct in all of our studies, that we may rightly divide the word of truth, that we may have no need to be ashamed, and that we will be able to say along with Paul, I know whom I have believed, through Christ the Master. Mm-hmm.